The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 616, recorded on July 6th, 2021.
Welcome to the 616th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 449th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Powell.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Right. So, that was an uneventful 4th of July. You know, tomorrow is Halo Day.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, 7-7.
Oh, look at that.
And I think November 7th is Mass Effect Day?
And 7. Yes, and 7.
And, of course, May the 4th is Star Wars Day.
Because yes.
May the 4th be with you, because they can't resist terrible puns.
And and the Sith returns on May the 5th.
Yeah. Anyways, Scott, what have you been playing?
I got a game through a contest called Abzu. And it's a aquatic exploration game where you're swimming underwater, exploring, watery biomes with fish and sharks and all sorts of stuff. And it starts out interesting. You find a little robot buddy, and you scan some stuff, and you sit on a statue, and you do like an aquarium mode where you're just seeing fish swim by, and then. I swam through one of those riptide currents and came out into a wide ocean area, and a shark ate my little robot buddy, and I'm like, okay, I guess I don't have a robot buddy. And then I revived a temple underwater. There's no text telling you what you're doing. It's all visual. So you're just kind of exploring it. It's kind of like Journey, I guess.
Yeah, well, Very guess kinda. Who the developer is. The same guys who did Journey.
Oh, okay.
Well, this game came out 5 years ago, in case anybody's wondering.
Yeah. I'm enjoying that. That's fun. I think. Ooh, some cops.
Yeah.
So, that's what I've been playing.
How about you, TJ?
Yeah, so I can talk about it now, but I've been playing Monster Hunter Stories 2, Wings of Ruin, for review.
Oh, right. How is that?
It's good. It's good in a very traditional JRPG kind of way.
Oh.
So, it's interesting because, I've always thought it would be kind of fun to befriend some of the crazy cool monsters and Monster Hunter
instead of killing them and killing their children and turning them into clothing.
Yes, swords. and bigger swords with which to kill more of them.
I just remember the zero punctuation review of Monster Hunter is where he says, we're going to, quote-unquote, research them thoroughly, and then research all their children until we can make a skin suit out of them.
Yes. Or a bigger sword with which to hit more of them.
Yeah.
You still do some of that in Monster Hunter Stories 2.
But they make it more into Pokemon.
The whole point of it is that your character is a rider, which they form bonds with the monsters, and essentially you raise a stable of monsters that you can take into battle and explore the world with. I think one of the more interesting, it's a turn-based RPG, but you only really have control over your main character. Your monster will act individual of you for the most part. But the whole battle system is arranged into a rock, paper, scissors style where it's speed, power, and technique. And generally every monster falls into one or two of those categories. And so, like, you, if you're gonna, and like, speed beats power, power beats technique, technique beats speed. And you, and so with that in mind, you want to bring a monster, like, if you know you're going up against a monster that uses power attacks, you would want to bring a speed type monster to that fight. And like, and you have control over, like, you have the typical access of, like, you can wield, like, great swords or hammers or bow and arrow or gun lances and other stuff. And they have techniques associated with them, and you can access speed, power, and technique freely in your own attacks. But it's interesting because, like, if you target a monster's weakness, you will have a face-off with them, and then you can get, like, you can build a meter which allows you to, and if you win that face-off, you build a meter that allows you to access even greater attacks. And so, like, yeah, it's interesting the way they've got their battle system set up, because, like, you can bring up to for the most of the game, you can bring up to five monsters with you out into the world and switch between them pretty freely. And so, like, every battle is kind of like a switch between, like, what weapon will work best on any given monster, what style will work best on any given monster, and then what kind of monster you should be bringing to sort of pair up with and fight against that fight. I like it so far. It's very JRPG grindy. But it's also got a lot of things that ease the annoyances of that. Like, there's a straight up fast forward function where you can turn the battle speed up to 3 times its normal rate if you're running into a lot of small fry that you, like, are trying to grind experience off of. And then once you get strong enough, you can just straight up hit the shoulder buttons and automatically win the battle. So those are nice conveniences. I think the game is kind of full of them. You can fast travel a lot at any time at certain points. You can use side quests to level up low level monsters pretty quickly. And generally speaking, like, it's still very grindy, but it's got a lot of, like, shortcuts that allow you to get past that grind and make things less monotonous.
I don't know. You know, it just reminds me that so many people are still hoping and waiting for Dragon's Dogma 2. For some reason, that just brings that to mind.
I can kind of see that. I mean, like, the pawn system and all that. But I don't know. I like the... I really do like the whole setup of, like, being able to find and raise, like, a Rathalos and make it into your friend and then use it to fight other monsters.
Scott, do you play the Monster Hunter games?
I did play the Monster Hunter game World, I think it was, and it was kind of like TJ was mentioning that the game was very focused on grinding out, killing these boss.
Well, no, monster grinding is a part of Monster Hunter. It always has been.
It's just that wasn't the kind of gameplay I wanted. And this sounds a little bit better, where you get, like, a story that you care about. Maybe, you know, you like the characters. Because it's like in Monster Hunter, you're, like, killing the same monster over and over again. And it just, I don't know, just I get tired of it. It didn't seem like my kind
of
game.
I only got tired of the bad controls.
I don't know. Nobody else complains about controls, so I don't know.
I do. Tell you. I can do grindy games if the controls are comfortable, and it just wasn't with Monster Hunter World. I just didn't like the controls. They just, I mean, State of Decay 2 is incredibly grindy, but I don't mind it. Because the controls make sense. Well, sort of. I just hate the fact that everything's mapped to the Y button. So I want to refuel my tank, but then I start talking to someone because they're close to me and the context shifted, you know. But other than that, you know, as long as the controls are good, I'm fine with grind.
Right.
Speaking of grind, did you see the new Tales of Arise trailer?
I don't think I saw it, no.
Yeah, they released one today. It's a new... It's actually not even a trailer, it's the opening credits.
Oh.
And, well, here's the thing. The opening credits act like a trailer. A trailer for its own game.
That's good.
And extremely anime, but that was to be expected. Anyways. I haven't been playing much. I could have sworn I was playing a new game. And I don't think so. I know I started to replay Biomutant on the Xbox. And it's still dull. But here's the thing. I can understand if people say they love that game. Cause it definitely has an audience. A very furry audience. But then again, they're not really characters based on any real animals. I mean, the main character is sort of like a cross between an ocelot, a wolverine, and a cat. And a dog.
What?
It's
an ocelot is pretty much a cat.
No, because you can shift the way it changes. I mean, you can, if you put it everything into strength, all of a sudden he bolts up and he has that bodybuilder build with a triangle shape. If he increases intelligence, his head expands and starts growing. It's weird.
It sounds odd, yes.
Yeah. But, like I said, it's the bad kind of grindy. It's the, Assassin's Creed Odyssey / Valhalla type of grind. You know, I'm getting really tired of games that have you conquering regions, you know? They all do that now. In order to finish a game, you have to conquer this region, and this region, and this region, and this region, and this region.
It sounds a little bit like World of Warcraft.
No, because World of Warcraft, for one, is a shifting online game. These are single-player games. I remember the first time they did that sort of thing, it was with that game in which was set in World War II, and you played an Irish racer, and every time you liberated a Nazi district, it went from black and white to color. I forgot the name of the game. It was a single-word game. Sabotage. That was the name. Sabotage. Wow, that's a game that I don't think people remember.
I
think it's from the original Xbox. No, it's Xbox 360 days. 360 PS3 days. Wow. Remember when the Xbox 360 wasn't considered old? Or the PlayStation 3 wasn't considered old?
I remember when Nintendo wasn't considered old. So, yeah.
Which Nintendo?
Nintendo, the NES.
Oh, well, no, that it was old. Dude, it came out in 1985.
I know, but I still remember it was like...
It's more recent than we think. I mean, the original Xbox came out in 2001.
Yeah.
That's why they're having their entire 20th year anniversary this year. You know that they're really gunning for that November 21st date for Xbox and, I mean, Halo Infinite. So that they can release it exactly on the 20th year anniversary. But they're not committing to it, notice. Even though everybody expects it, they want it to come out on November 21st. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Go ahead, TJ.
Hey. Nintendo Switch OLED model will go on sale October 8th for $350 from The Verge. Nintendo is announcing a new Nintendo Switch model today with a larger 7-inch screen, 720-pixel screen, or OLED display. While rumors had suggested this new Switch would ship with a new NVIDIA chip inside, this new OLED model is mostly a screen upgrade. Nintendo lists the Switch OLED model as only supporting 1080p via TV mode, and rumors had suggested 4K support, thanks to a rumored NVIDIA chip upgrade. The Switch OLED model will go on sale for $350 starting on October 8th. Other than the new screen, the revised model includes an adjustable stand for tabletop play, 64 gigabytes of built-in storage, up from previous models 32 gigabytes, a new dock for a wired Ethernet port built in, and improved audio for handheld or tabletop play. Nintendo only mentions up to 1080p via HDMI and TV mode for the TV dock, so the rumored 4K mode isn't part of this OLED Switch. Nintendo has confirmed to The Verge that there are no major internal changes to the CPU or memory. Nintendo Switch OLED model does not have a new CPU or more RAM from the previous Nintendo Switch models, says a Nintendo spokesperson. Original Joy-Cons will all work with this new Switch, and all existing games will run on this new OLED model. Nintendo is also offering both black and white units when the Switch OLED model ships later this year. The new dock will also work with both the Nintendo Switch and this new OLED model. This updated Switch has been rumored heavily in recent months, and Nintendo has chosen to reveal it well after the company's E3 show that focused exclusively on new Switch games. Reports had suggested this new Switch would appear before E3 began last month.
Yeah, I don't know if it had been announced at E3 that it would have gotten a positive response.
I take issue with the reporting that this is what the Switch Pro was supposed to be. I don't think it is.
No, it's not.
I think it's more like, you know, like, and people have mentioned this today. Nintendo has kind of a playbook when it comes to their systems, like the DS and the 3DS.
Yeah.
They did the DS, they did the DS Lite, they did the DS XL, and then they did the new DS XL. And I think this is kind of like one of those stages where it's kind of like a 1.5 over the original Nintendo Switch, where the Nintendo Switch Lite was kind of like a 0.5.
The thing I have is that, you know what, for no additional money, because we all know that 350 is all screen, the parts inside the Switch are not that great, they could have at least put a 256 gigabyte of SD card in there.
That would have been nice, yeah.
I mean, come on.
This is, yeah.
They also had to put in a new speaker system to fit the new screen frame.
Yeah. Well, at least they upgraded that part, too.
I'm not saying it's worth it. In fact,
it's not worth it for $350. No,
I'm not gonna, like, there's only one scenario in which I would buy this.
Is it your old one breaks?
No. Well, maybe. it comes out on the same day as Metroid Dread.
Oh.
And I have a sneaking suspicion that if they put out a Metroid Dread limited edition Nintendo Switch OLED, I will have no choice but to buy the shit out of that, because I refuse to miss that.
You know, coincidentally, Metroid Dread is being released on October 8th. So
yes, same day. Uh-huh.
More than a bit of a coincidence there.
I have a feeling there's going to be a special edition. And when they do, I will be too weak to resist.
Yeah. Here's the big question. What are the Joy-Cons for the new model going to be? Are they going to fix that too?
Nope. We actually reached out to Nintendo at Shack News today and got confirmation that the configuration and functionality of the Nintendo Switch Joy-Con remotes are going to be the exact same on the new model as the old model.
No, I mean, are they going to be a sturdier stuff and not have such a bad drift?
That's exactly what I was just saying.
Oh, okay, so they're going to use the same crap.
Yep. I don't feel bad for anybody that got a Switch Lite.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't, because, like, the Nintendo Switch Lite serves a very specific purpose of people that don't feel like going all in, don't play in TV mode, and just feel like having a handheld system to take with them on the go.
But, so, here's the thing. Let's talk about the screen now. An OLED screen is different from what it has now in that, one, it's a lot sharper. The blacks are black. The colors are more vibrant, you know, and there's more difference to them. Two, battery drain. There's a lot less battery drain with OLED. And I think that's the biggest thing for a lot of people, which is why you're saying, you know, this is more for people who don't use it in TV mode and just use it basically as a handheld console.
Yeah. Yeah, like every single one of the upgrades on this thing are for handheld mode. I really don't understand why so focused on the handheld mode.
They must have marketing that says that most people use it in handheld, or at least their demographic, which is young to teen to college age.
One of my colleagues' tin pot theory is that, or a tinfoil hat theory, is that they were on a bad deal with the screen maker that was already providing them displays for the Nintendo Switch. And so they moved to a different display maker for this.
I don't think so. This has been rumored for a long, long while that they were going to, at the very least, have an LED screen. Every single rumor for the past year and a half was that there would be the Switch Pro would have an OLED screen. And it makes sense for Nintendo because the screen that they use for the launch Switch is cheap. Which is how they got the price down, I think.
I really don't think this is the Switch Pro.
I don't think it's a Switch Pro, but the upgraded Switch, you know, whatever mid-tier that they were going to do. Like I said, the Switch screen, and sorry if you like your Switch screen, but, you know, it's kind of cheap.
It is.
I mean, anybody who has a cell phone uses an OLED screen and knows how good they can be.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree with you. It's, I just think that this is maybe the framework for what a Switch Pro will be. I think this is like gonna be the frame on which they build the Switch Pro. But yeah, I don't think they're ready to move up to the next big step yet.
I think the Switch Pro will come out when the parts that will make it, they can comfortably sell for $350.
Yeah. Well, also when they can comfortably secure those parts and manufacture on a huge basis.
You know, here's the thing. COVID-19 only exacerbated it, but there was still a chip shortage even before all that.
Right.
But the thing is that Nintendo can afford to wait.
Yes.
They can wait 2 more years.
I mean, they're already selling Switches pretty much as fast as they can make them.
And they still have that Switch model with the Joy-Cons docked on it, so they're not, you know, they're not Joy-Cons. They're just actually part of the controller.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever that's coming out. Or has it come out? No, it hasn't come out yet.
The Switch Lite? Yes, it's out.
Oh, okay. So they have the Switch Lite too, so.
Yeah, so. This was interesting. I don't know why they made such a big deal out of the Ethernet port, but
you know, there are people who have weak Wi-Fi connections or no Wi-Fi at all and just have broadband.
Yeah.
There was also a dongle that you could buy for the Nintendo Switch dock that you could just plug an Ethernet cable in.
There you go, but simplicity. I mean,
you know. Yeah. But it's interesting that they made kind of a – and also my understanding is that they actually removed a USB port to do that. So that's kind of a bummer.
Well, here's the thing. Like I said, they are in no rush. They have zero rush. They I don't think they expect this new Switch to sell. If it does, then, you know, yay. But I think they just are putting it out there just to be out there.
Hmm.
So that people, you know, can see, oh, this one is so there's an elite class.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can see that.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Streets of Rage 4's first major DLC arrives July 15th, and this comes from PC Gamer. Streets of Rage 4's first major DLC, Mr. X's Nightmare, will release on July 15th across Steam, GOG, and the Windows Store. Most notable about this expansion is that it adds a survival mode, endless waves of increasingly tough foes, with your fighters earning stackable perks the longer you stay alive. There are two survival modes, random, which keeps the fight unpredictable through generated runs, and weekly, a series of static gauntlets generated each week. Playing survival also permanently unlock new moves across the game's other modes. Progression will unlock new weapons and other bonuses, and of course there are leaderboards. The DLC also includes three new playable characters, Estelle Aguirre, Max Thunder, and Shiva. More original music from T. Lopez, Sonic did Sonic Mania and League of Legends. New weapons, new enemies, and more interestingly, some sort of character customization around the movesets. The latter hasn't been detailed yet, but anything but even a slight whiff of God Hand about it has to be good. Mr. X's Nightmare will cost $8 when it releases on July 15th. Alongside this, a free update for all players will add a quote-unquote in-depth training system, new color palette options, a new Mania Plus difficulty level, and a bunch of refinements and tweaks based on community feedback. So, TJ, you are the Streets of Rage 4 fan here.
Yes. And I have been waiting for this for a very long time. When I reviewed this game, I think one of my few itches about it, it was up there in my indie games of the year list and up there in my top 10 games of the year list. Hades beat it out in the indie list, and I had some other ones that beat it out in the non-indie list. Yes. Other games came out, but it was still in my top 10. But like one of my few gripes about it when it came out was that I wish some of the bosses were so fleshed out that I found myself wishing those bosses were unlockable playable characters. And sure enough, the three characters that I thought that would work with are the three characters that they are putting in the game now as playable characters. So, problem solved. This game is now a 10 out of 10. That's probably not entirely true, but I do love the fact that they are putting these characters in the game, and I love this survival mode thing, because, like, me and my buddies would slay to have like a mode in which we just fight for as long as we can and see how much of a score we can rack up. I think it's really cool the way that they've said it. Oh yeah. And the music in Streets of Rage 4 has already been awesome. So I'm excited to have more tracks to listen to. This, Streets of Rage 4 is fantastic. It's maybe the best, beat 'em up in the modern era. And,
it's had over 2.5 million downloads, I believe. And the reason why they say downloads and not sales is because it's also on Game Pass.
Yeah. But it's an incredible game, and I'm happy to have more of it, and I'm happy it's coming so soon.
Scott, have you played Streets of Rage 4?
No, that doesn't seem like a game I typically play.
You don't like beat 'em ups?
Yeah. No. I don't know. I haven't played beat 'em ups in a long time. So
just the last ones you played were Ninja Turtles, right? Or The Simpsons?
Yeah, something like that.
Or the X-Men.
Long time ago. Usually play JRPGs and RPGs and turn-based games, mostly.
I remember going into arcades, and the side-scrolling beat 'em up were huge for like a year or two. And it would be X-Men, Simpsons, Ninja Turtles...
They don't seem to have those anymore.
No.
The last time I was in the arcade, they seemed to be a lot of rail shooters and just other kind of games that just have really bad controls.
I need to play DDR again. I used to have the pro mats too. I was really good. I was doing expert level what's it called songs on DDR.
Pinball is still alive and well.
Yeah, actually, I got a I attended PepCom, and they had this one pinball game that's coming out. I think it's based on Pirates of the Caribbean, and my God, it is the most complex table I've ever seen. Jeez, I'm crow.
Stern Pinball just released a Led Zeppelin pinball
machine. Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
That is actually licensed by Led Zeppelin and uses their music.
Yeah, it was just, you should have seen the, have you seen how elaborate that thing is? Oh, no, I'm sorry, no. It's the Mandalorian pinball table. I'm sorry,
That's also by Stern. And yeah, the machines that they're putting out right now are equal parts like video. They're equal parts video game on the backboard of the machine and also pinball game going on the table.
I'm just saying that thing is, well, for one thing, it costs $8,000 to buy, just in case you're wondering, folks. It is so elaborate. I mean, it has so many levels. And I'm not talking about the back screen arcade thing. I'm talking about the actual play, you know, on the table. So many levels.
Yeah, they're so cool.
And it makes me happy because I grew up with pinball games, and they never went away.
Yes. I've actually got a place that's pretty close to me called Pinballs. And their whole thing is they have like over 100 machines there that they keep in good working order.
And video games helped keep them alive too, to tell you the truth, because one of the first games that EA made for the album games, you know, back from the 80s, was Pinball Construction Set. And I made a lot of pinball tables with that. And then you had all these pinball emulations. And, you know, it just increased interest in pinball. Because for a while it looked like, you know, coin-op arcade games were going to, you know, block out pinball tables. But that never happened. I think it's because pinball is still physical.
Mm-hmm.
As much as you can have an excitement on an arcade game, you still have, there's a ball, there's the flippers, and you can actually see it, and, well, you can tilt it, but there's no hacks, you have to be good. This is a physical game, you have to have timing, and you have to have eyesight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was another thing I noticed missing from the last arcade I was at, was pinball machines. I don't think I saw any, but
well,
I haven't been to a lot of them.
A lot of them are expensive. Like I said, yeah. The Mandalorian table is $8,000.
Yeah. You know, Star Trek one that I want is like $6,000. So yeah, they're expensive, definitely.
And if you want the limited edition Mandalorian table, $9,200, although it's sold out.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, listen to this. It comes with the limited edition comes with an exclusive mirrored back glass inspired by Bexar armor, iconic custom cabinet artwork, custom high-gloss powdered pinball armor, a custom designer autographed bottom arch, exclusive inside art blades, in upgraded audio system, anti-reflection glass, a shaker motor, and a sequentially numbered plaque and a certificate of authenticity. They know that these are going to be, like 10 years from now, these are going to be collector's items that are handed around. So, but if you ever see the table, my God, it's... There are so many levels. It is a deep table. There's a gigantic little baby Yoda, too.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to see this one yet, but I've heard of it, and I want to play it.
I'm going to give you the link. So anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, let's see. All right. Okay. Yeah, King of Fighters 15 is now coming. Now also coming to Xbox Series X and S. This is from Eurogamer. King of Fighters 15 is now also coming. Okay, we already said that. In a tweet, SNK confirmed the launch platforms for upcoming fighting game, which was recently delayed due in quarter one of 2022. Recently, like to quarter one of 2022 due to production issues associated with rising cases of COVID-19 in Japan. King of Fighters 15 is due out on PC via Windows 10, Steam, and Epic Game Store, PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. Or, I'm sorry, the Xbox One and Nintendo Switch are not on the list.
That's interesting to me. Because yeah. It's coming out on the 9th generation Xbox, but not the 8th generation Xbox. Which tells me that they're expecting the Xbox Series S and X to be the regular, the main thing, and no one's buying an Xbox One anymore. But no Nintendo Switch version? I wonder what that tells me. Do they think there's going to be a pro version coming out next year?
We don't know the behind the scene deals of what's going on to get these games on various consoles. So I don't know if Nintendo is just not interested because they don't even seem to. I mean, they're more interested in their Smash Brothers game. So that might be why they're not putting
there. I don't think so. So DJ, King of Fighters 13 is a classic, and I keep on seeing it over and over and over again. I have never heard of King of Fighters 14.
King of Fighters 14 was like it was the most recent like 2.5D fighter, which was okay. It wasn't like I don't think it was anything all that special. But this particular upgrade has a lot more personality, I think, than that one did. They've really put. I feel like Samurai Showdown helped SNK to up their game a bit. Because ever since Samurai Showdown came out, they have brought that level of quality and skill to their characters, their fighting, their animations, and I think it's helped them to make better overall 2.5D fighting games. I don't think they're on the level of Guilty Gear, but I do think that they still have their niche that they fill, and they also have apparently worked on a new netcode system for this that aims to match kind of what Guilty Gear Strive is doing. So I am interested to see how this turns out. I don't know if I'm going to jump in both feet first yet.
It looks like Street Fighter 3 in terms of visual style.
Oh, are you talking about King of Fighters 13? Or
15.
Are you talking about
15.
Okay, King of Fighters 15. It looks like Street Fighter 5.
Really? It just has that soft, you know, painted look to it.
Yeah, but the characters are still 2.5D in the new one.
Oh, okay. I'm just wondering if maybe it's... Well, I don't think it's too powerful for the Xbox One. I just don't think they're going to bother with it. And I'm wondering if the storage space of the Switch is the main barrier for them.
Doesn't seem to be stopping them on any other game that they're bringing over, like Monster Hunter and Witcher, both are large games.
Monster Hunter isn't as big as you might think. Or at least not Monster Hunter Rise and Monster Hunter Stories. I would say that both the I've looked at the gigabytes on those games recently, and they're both under 20.
I mean, fighting games have entire character models. That's where most of the memory is sucked up.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I think they eventually put a Samurai Showdown on Switch? Let me make sure of that. But I think that it just took them some time after it first came out on other consoles and PC.
Yeah, it could be that it's unannounced for now so that they can figure out a way to fit it on the Switch.
Let's see. Yes, they did eventually put it on the Nintendo Switch.
So you said... So your anticipation of King of Fighters 15 is like, I guess I'll play it if I get it.
I'm going to watch and see what other people say and then decide on if I want to jump in after that. Because I'm spending a lot of time on Guilty Gear Strive right now, and I don't want to dedicate that level of attention to learning another fighting game right now.
Yeah. But it's SNK. I already know how it's going to play. The bosses are going to be impossibly hard, and there's going to be a lot of jiggling.
Yeah,
from May it looks like.
They always have jiggling. They're behind Dead or Alive, for crying out loud. Capcom. That's Capcom.
That's Team Ninja.
No, I'm talking about publisher. Oh, no, they're Soul Calibur, SNK, right?
Dead or Alive is...
Bandai Camco.
No, it's Koei Tecmo.
Koei Tecmo. Whatever, one of the ones that with a KM in their name.
SNK is handled by SNK, I think, publishes itself right now.
Oh, SNK has always done themselves, yeah.
But they also have help from Bandai Namco. For publishing, anyways. They still develop the game themselves. But Dead or Alive is Team Ninja and published by Koei Tecmo.
Yeah. Which is why you have all the softcore porn.
But yeah, this I will say I've been following the trailers for this game, and it looks like it could be pretty. It looks like they're kind of trying to capture a feel of more of the earlier games, even though they're doing the 2.5D thing.
They have to separate themselves somehow.
Yeah, and like that's what a lot of people want to see. They want to see something that's new and good, but also pays homage to the original stuff.
See, here's the thing about fighting games. They can easily crowd each other out, you know? I mean, you'll have people, you know, Skullgirls will muscle its way to the forefront, you have all these fighting games, you know, I'm not talking about the big ones like Street Fighter and all that stuff. I'm talking about the mid-tier ones, and King of Fighters always seemed like a mid-tier to me, even though they're always talked about reverently, like someone might reverently talk about Shenmue. You know, if only we could have a new King of Fighters. And it has to prove itself somehow.
Yeah. If they're doing rollback in it, like I've heard they are, then it has a good chance of being better than, I think, the previous one. Because the previous one was still delay-based. And besides being kind of ugly, that kind of screwed it over as well.
You know, that reminds me, they claim they're still working on Tekken X Street Fighter.
Actually, I heard, like, they very, very recently said that they stopped work on it.
Really? Because I heard one of the developers say, no, we're still working on it. Whenever that thing comes out.
They said, I think, at the end of June, that they had officially shuttered all final work on the game.
That's a pity. Well, all the controversy about Street Fighter X Tekken just killed it, I think.
Yeah. Well, also the fact that Tekken vs. Street Fighter, they put DLC right on the disc, and that would...
Well, that was Street Fighter X Tekken, yeah. Like Pac-Man and... and the American cover Mega Man.
Yes.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
RoboCop is getting a video game in 2023. From PC Games In. The Nacon Direct show today had a surprise reveal, an all-new RoboCop game. The presentation featured a quick reveal teaser for RoboCop Rogue City, which is currently in development and slated for release sometime in 2023. We got a quick glimpse of old Detroit, a reference to OCP, and a peek at RoboCop's leg holster opening up to reveal his trusty service pistol. RoboCop Rogue City promises to be a new story based on the three RoboCop films. Which tell the story of Detroit police officer Alex Murphy and his transformation into from injured cop to unstoppable crime-fighting machine. Brazenly satirical of the consumerism and excess of the late 1980s, the first RoboCop films in particular are classics of the period science fiction genre and have remained cult classics to this day. There's little information available about RoboCop Rogue City, however. Nacon will publish the game, which may be an open world game or FPS game, and it's being developed by Teyon, the studio responsible for Rambo, the video game, and Terminator Resistance.
Yeah, one of them bad, one of them not bad.
Yeah.
The Terminator Resistance was a surprise in that it wasn't a bad game and it was merely a competent one. So, since they're doing all three RoboCop films, I guess we'll have ninjas. Mm. Cybernetic ninjas.
Well, I guess you have to have robot enemies if you have a robot cop.
Well, you see, the RoboCop 3 was written by Frank Miller, and it shows.
Yeah. It's a very bad film.
I don't know if it's bad so much as very weird and tonally weird and just written by someone who doesn't understand Paul Verhoeven or satire.
Yeah. Because it is definitely there in RoboCop 1 and 2. Like,
I don't know. RoboCop 2 played it a little bit more straight and said, oh, yeah, OCP is actually the villain. Didn't you know that? When people who understood satire said, yeah, we knew that OCP was the villain in RoboCop 1. They were bad guys. They were tearing down. They were hyper gentrification before hyper gentrification. But yeah, I guess they have to say based on the three RoboCop films instead of based on the two, because I think they just have to say that because it's all one platter. Whether you like it or not, RoboCop 3 is part of that canon, and you can't wipe it away like what's his face did with Superman Returns and take away Superman 3 and 4. They still exist. Mm-hmm. This could be good, or it could be terrible. Obviously, it's not the first RoboCop video game.
Yes, it's also kind of tone deaf to make a RoboCop game in this day and age. But
why is that?
Because of everything going on right now outside of video games.
Well, look at the name, RoboCop Rogue City.
I suppose.
You know. I mean, RoboCop is forced to do those three directives, you know, that are actual police directives, serve the public good, etc., etc., etc. So, I know, here's the thing, the entire satire in one was that he just used over-the-top violence to solve minor problems, you know, like, someone wants to commit suicide, we'll just kill him.
Yeah. It's, I'll wait to see the trailer, but like I'm not holding high hopes for this. It's, I don't know. I think RoboCop.
I know your juices will be flowing when you hear dun 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 dun.
Well, that also all depends on whether or not Peter Weller is there.
You know, actually, RoboCop 3 proved that. It wasn't just Peter Weller's jaw that you had to deal with. Sort of like Batman, you know. Yeah, no, it's not. You can't just put any actor there because only their jaw shows.
Hmm. Well, and it's like in the remake, that guy did not do a great job. I don't think he made for a very good RoboCop. I don't think it was a terrible movie. But that guy was no Peter Weller.
Yeah, you know, the RoboCop remake, and does anybody remember the RoboCop remake?
That's what I was just talking about.
I'm just saying, they should have just not called it RoboCop and called it something else.
Yeah.
Had it been, you know, Laser, CyberCop. If they call it CyberCop, they would have said, oh, yeah, it's a little like RoboCop, but it's not RoboCop. And they would have accepted it a lot more.
They wanted the name franchise recognition.
I think, though, it was interesting that while RoboCop went from him being robotic to more and more human, the reboot had him be very, very human, and then just became more and more robotic. Sort of reverse going on there.
Hmm. Kurtwood Smith was also just a fucking great villain in the first movie.
Yeah, he had Kurtwood Smith, Michael Ironside, Miguel Ferrer.
Mm-hmm.
And Miguel Ferrer, for those you don't know, is the son of Jose Ferrer, and Miguel Ferrer lost his career from that movie. RoboCop.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Couldn't you see the resemblance? They look almost exactly like each other, too.
Hmm.
Yeah, Michael Ironside is good in everything he's in, like Space Hunter. And V.
I guess I'll reserve judgment for when we start to see trailers, but I'm not holding out high hopes for the RoboCop game.
And Splinter Cell. I remember people were just all in a huff about Michael Ironside not being the voice of Sam Fisher. And I'm thinking, you know, Michael Ironside is getting very, very, very old. Are you going to trot him out there like James Earl Jones? Every time I hear James Earl Jones trying to do Darth Vader, it sounds like he's already a mummy.
Yeah.
Anyways. It's a licensed game. We'll have to see.
I mean, they have... I guess they have schlocky action licenses under lockdown now because based on the
Rambo and Terminator, yeah. All these 80s products.
Are they going to do another Predator game next?
Or Total Recall? Although technically that's a 90s movie. It was 1990. It also had a really unliked reboot, too. Does anybody remember the Total Recall remake?
I do. There's, like, no reason for its existence.
No. Maybe they'll do a Blade Runner game.
That's such a waste of Jeremy Renner, too, because he's decent.
Mm. I mean, I liked Blade Runner 2049. It wasn't what I expected, but at least it didn't feel unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
You were going to say something?
Oh, no. I just, like, Blade Runner 2049, it was like... the most iconic thing I can remember about Blade Runner 2049 is that last year California was on fire, and it kind of looked like that.
You know, you remember the Blade Runner video game?
Yes.
What was interesting about it, for those who don't know, it was an adventure game of the LucasArts style. It wasn't LucasArts, by the way. It was Westwood. And they actually had it that it randomized itself so that you didn't know who was a replicant and who was a human. And this story had tons and tons of ending depending on who was what. And for the life of me, I could never keep that little girl alive.
Mm.
She would always die somehow, some way.
They've been trying very, very, like, the original code for the game was lost, and they've been trying very, very hard to, like, what's the word? Basically, reconstruct it from scratch with what they have.
What's interesting is that that game was an interquel in which it was happening during the events of Blade Runner, and you would meet up with Terrell and I forgot his name. Leon.
Mm-hmm.
And voiced by their original voice actors, too. And I think B.D. Wong was in it, too. I think you actually got to meet the character, that Asian guy who Roy kills.
Mm-hmm.
I make your eyes.
Yeah, I wish they would be able to fully reconstruct that game, because I think it's on GOG, but I'm not sure it's complete yet.
No, James Hong, I'm sorry. I get those two confused. James Hong, who the last role that everybody knows from him is Mr. Ping in the Kung Fu Panda movies. He's way up there, too. He said, and it's really depressing, if they're going to make another Kung Fu Panda movie, they better do it quick, because he doesn't expect to live much longer.
That is sad to hear.
Yeah, B.D. Wong is the evil guy in Jurassic Park, or evil scientist.
Okay, so actually, GOG.com does have the Blade Runner game. I guess they did finish putting it together.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure it's just not a DOS-boxed version?
I don't know.
Because you can still buy the actual game with its 3.5-inch floppy.
No, it's. Well, I don't know.
I mean, you don't have to. Here's the thing: in order to make it, said it works on current systems, you have to, you know, get the original code and work around that. But if you just do the original code, you have to. If you just do the original code, yeah, just put it in DOSBox and let it run from there.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like it's a DOSBox type thing.
Yeah, it's on GOG. That's probably using the DOSBox for her.
Hmm.
It was always a decent looking game. Oh, you also meet Rachel too. That's right. Anyways, this podcast is petering out, so look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your excellent, leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. All set us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. You can go ahead and check that link of the Mandalorian pinball game.
Oh, yeah.
And it's quite substantial.
Nice.
And it only costs $8,000.
Oh, look at that. There's a baby Yoda.
Yeah. But here's the thing about that table. It is really deep. It is like 6 inches deep. That's what I was shocked by. There are multiple levels in it. And usually pinball tables don't have that depth on them. But this one does. It's deep into the table.
The Star Trek Next Generation one did, because I remember it had a little pod and you could go up into like a upper level.
Oh yeah, I mean a lot of them had you know, different levels, but this one takes it to another level.
Yeah.
And it is really, really dense.
Yeah, you have a little baby Yoda there. That does look really cool.
Yeah. I wonder if he speaks. He probably speaks. Probably says something. And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.
And see you next week.